And a good Friday morning to you. Welcome into the Nick Craig Show, streaming live on YouTube, Rumble, and X. Don't forget that you can take the show with you on demand by checking out the Nick Craig Show in your favorite podcast app. You can also listen online by visiting the website nickcraig.com, making it easy to find all of the content related to the show. Want to thank the Law Group this morning for their support of the program. Lawgroupnc.com is their website. More from them coming up a little bit later on in the program this morning. Well, we are just a little over a week away from the official start of the Atlantic hurricane season that starts June the 1st and runs all the way to November the 30th. And yesterday, NOAA, the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, held their yearly briefing where they release their forecast and go through some of the details, some of the conditions as it relates to a busier hurricane season. We'll now turn it over to NOAA and get their thoughts on, well, what is this potential hurricane season going to look like for so many people across the eastern seaboard?
All right, so without further ado, let's look at the numbers for the Atlantic hurricane season, the great work that Matt and his team did. So we're predicting an above average season once again, 2025, above average. And you can see the graphic up there. Specifically, it's a 60% chance of above normal season, 30% chance of a near normal season, and only a 10% chance to be below normal. So we're really looking at an above normal season once again. For the range of storms, we're calling for 13 to 19 named storms. That's when we get to 39 miles an hour when we name the storms. So 13 to 19 of those. Of these, 6 to 10 are forecast to become hurricanes. And that's when you get to the 74 mile an hour mark. And 3 to 5 is the number of major hurricanes. That's Cat 3 and above, with maximum sustained winds of 111 miles an hour or greater. The average is 14. Named storms, 7 hurricanes, 3 major. So above the average.
So yes, it is in fact above the average. I'll note it is slightly above the average compared to what a normal year is. The average from 1990 through the year 2020 is 14.4. Now, obviously, you can't have a fourth of a hurricane. That's not really possible. But 14.4 is the average, an average of about 7 hurricanes that make it to the actual hurricane status, getting out of the tropical storm status, and 3 to 5 major hurricanes. So with that, what you've got is a slightly above average season from NOAA, not an overly active season, but a slightly above average or close to average season from the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration. So as we look at those details and go through what are some of the conditions as it relates to allowing this to be what NOAA is predicting as an above average season, you just heard there from the National Weather Service Director Ken Graham, who is in charge of NWS. That's the National Weather Service, which operates all across the country. They operate the National Hurricane Center, the Severe Prediction Center out of Oklahoma, operating all of those different entities. Here is the list of names as it relates to the hurricane forecast. They have released all of the various names that are on the list this year. Names of storms do tend to have in the past and will continue to be retired. The first name will start off with Andre. That is the A name, and will end with Wendy if it makes its way all through the alphabet. With looking at the forecast, it doesn't seem likely that is the case, but obviously a forecast is one thing. The actual practicality of what the Atlantic hurricane season looks like could be something very different. So as we sit here about 9 days ahead of June the 1st, well, NOAA and the National Hurricane Center wants to make sure that you're prepared and says it's a perfect time to do so.
Got to be ready. There's no lines for supplies today. No lines for gas, no lines for plywood, no lines for water. So while there's no lines, it's a good time to go out there and get your supplies and your kit, put it together. I've said this for decades. There's no such thing as Hurricane Justa. And the Weather Service, being a NOAA, being a part of the WMO committee that names storms, I'll make sure we'll never have a Hurricane Justa. There's no such thing as Justa Cat 1. There's no such thing as Justa Cat 2, Justa Cat 3. Every one of them are different. The bigger the storm, the slower the storm, the more the impact. I don't care the category. So remember that.
Well, and we, of course, do remember that in southeastern North Carolina. You had that a storm last year, potential tropical cyclone. I think it was 9 that dumped that an unimaginable amount of rain through portions of southern New Hanover County and in and around the Southport area. I mean, some areas there got over a foot of rain, a foot and a half of rain in what was a relatively small period of time. wasn't a named storm. And as you just heard from him, you know, there's no such thing as just a category one or just a tropical storm. You know, these are very dynamic weather systems, and you get into a position where even a low category grade storm or something that is not even listed or making it to the threshold of being a hurricane can leave a catastrophic damage and destruction left behind. Of course, then you look at a larger storm, which was Hurricane Helene, taking a very abnormal track and absolutely pounding portions of western North Carolina, leaving unimaginable devastation and destruction out west, killing over 100 people in North Carolina, flooding out and destroying so many communities back in September of last year, just a couple of weeks after Labor Day, an unimaginable situation. So making sure that everybody is prepared and set to go is part of one of the main focuses of NOAA. As we get into the beginning of June, we'll go through some additional details on a hurricane preparedness kit, what you need to look for, and we'll try to get up with our folks here at the National Weather Service in Wilmington to talk about that as June 1st is the official kickoff. Now, with that, just because of a calendar date, and this is probably obvious to most of you, but just because the calendar says that something happens doesn't mean that that's where storms have to fall. So when you look at the hurricane timing and when the peak of that takes place, it's actually not obviously June 1st. It's as you get into the later parts of the hurricane cycle. Really, the peak is somewhere around the middle of September. This is after the Atlantic Basin has had time to warm up from the warm temperatures of June and July and into August. So you really have that peak season, start seeing the increase middle of August, really through the end of October and into November when you've got, according, and this is data from 1944 to 2020, and it's very obvious that those hurricanes and those tropical storms fall very much in that window of August 1st through November the 1st, but a hurricane really can happen any time of the year, but the official start there is, of course, June the 1st. So a briefing yesterday from NOAA. They were down in Louisiana looking at what was 20 years of since Hurricane Katrina and the devastation left along portions of the Gulf Coast, the city of New Orleans, and all of the devastation in the parishes around there. That's where NOAA did this briefing yesterday morning, and some officials that in and around that area spoke about what's been done in the last 20 years to bolster the community and to bolster readiness and get everything prepared for what is a very uncertain time of year, especially for those living either on the eastern seaboard or in the Gulf of now America, where some of those storms tend to get in there and can wreak havoc and hell across portions of the continental United States. For those that have followed me for any period of time, you know I'm a big weather buff, so we'll be taking a look at the forecast as we get into later parts of June and July. We'll look at the models, we'll look at some of the forecasting, and keep you up to date with everything as it relates to the hurricane forecast. That is going to be a feature of what the nice video element of doing this show live on YouTube, Rumble, and X is being able to show you some of this stuff. And of course, for our audio listeners, we'll walk you through it as well for those folks listening on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Play, wherever you are listening, keeping you very much up to date with the hurricane season, which again kicks off June the 1st. I'll have some more details in the show notes this morning, including some charts and pictures. You can get access to that by visiting patreon.com/Nick Craig. That's patreon.com/Nick Craig. Daily show notes and more, including our monthly hangout, which is going to be happening next Thursday. Stay tuned to your Patreon accounts for the Zoom link for that. So this morning, ahead of the Memorial Day weekend, obviously it's been a busy news week, I caught a very interesting article that ran a couple of days ago over at the New York Times. And you may have heard about the article itself. It's essentially talking about the influence of people like Joe Rogan and how the left needs to try and combat that. And I thought it was an interesting enough read. And I try not to do this very often, but sometimes going through and reading a story, especially these longer pieces from the New York Times or the Wall Street Journal, start to finish. So that's what we're going to jump into this morning. The headline published over at the New York Times by Theodore Schiffer is Democrats throw money at a problem countering GOP clout online. Very interesting headline there from the New York Times. So let's dive into the details here this morning. It starts off by saying, 6 months after the Democrat Party's crushing 2024 defeat, the party's mega donors are being inundated with overtures to spend tens of millions of dollars to develop an army of left-leaning online influencers. At a donor's retreat and in a pitch documents seen by the New York Times, liberal strategists are pushing the party's rich backers to reopen their wallets for a conclave of projects to help Democrats, as the cliche goes, find the next Joe Rogan. The proposals, the scope of which have not been previously reported, are meant to energize glum donors and persuade them that they can compete culturally with President Donald Trump if only they can throw enough money at the problem. And boy, isn't that rich right there. Is that not the greatest definition of Democrat politics that you've ever heard? Just throw money at the problem? It's the reason the federal government's in the position that it's in right now with the sweeping amount of federal debt. Because instead of actually solving a problem, Democrats for decades have decided the solution is just funneling money into the problem with no idea as to an actual solution to whatever said problem is. I mean, it's the greatest example of what's wrong with Democrats. The reason they can't win elections, the reason that they're losing in the public sphere on so many different issues is because instead of actually trying to solve a problem, they just will dump more money at the problem. And that's a losing strategy. And I guess it would appear that even at this donor retreat, all of these liberal strategists as they're described don't understand that that's not the solution either. And this idea of, you know, finding the next Joe Rogan. This is a news flash to all those on the left. You guys don't need to find the next Joe Rogan. You had the next Joe Rogan. You had him himself. But you guys went so AWOL. You guys went so far to the left with your policies, your ideas, your party principles that you drove him away. You drove him into the quote unquote right wing. You had Joe Rogan. But because you thought it was a good idea to talk about how men can get pregnant and how that was a normal, real thing, that it was perfectly acceptable and normal to shame and go after individuals because they misgendered somebody and didn't ask them what their pronouns were before they started having a conversation with them, you drove him away. Because you thought it was a good idea to allow men to play in female sports, you drove him away. Because of all of these, what I'll call batshit crazy ideas and policies, you had Joe Rogan, but you ran him off. You had many of these other people that were at many times very influential in the left, and you drove them all away. You're not going to find the next Joe Rogan with your current status of policies. With your current issue list, you're not going to find the next Joe Rogan because the things that you believe are crazy. The things that Democrats want to push forward as their top policies and principles are insane. No rational, normal person believes that they're good. That's the issue that the left is facing right now. And so, in typical Democrat fashion, what are we going to do? Open up your checkbook, write big checks as mega donors to the Democrat Party, write big checks to the Democrats so that they can go out and find their next Joe Rogan. It's insane how tone deaf. And really, this goes back to something that you've heard me say a lot. It is the inability to have any sort of inward reflection. It is the inability for the left to even just take a look, a glance, not even stare, just glance into the mirror and ask themselves, what are we doing? What are these things that we are pushing forward as some of our top issues that are going to hopefully resonate with the American people, resonate with the voting population, so that they will support us, our party, and our candidates, right? That's how elections work. A party has to kind of set the framework, set the ideas, and then you've got all of the various candidates up and down the ballot that are all running on a similar message, obviously tailored towards different communities, tailored towards different offices, but the core message coming out of the Democrat Party is the same. And as I mentioned, when you look at the core tenets of the Democrat Party right now, what are they? Well, we hate Trump. We believe that it's perfectly normal for men to play in female sports. We believe that men can have children, even though, of course, biologically, there is no way that that is possible. Those are some of their main tenets. And they wonder why they lost somebody like Joe Rogan. They wonder why people like Bill Maher, sitting on his HBO show, bringing David Hogg, the vice chair of the Democrat Party, and essentially just laugh at him. They wonder why people like Stephen A. Smith, who is undoubtedly a left-leaning individual, not a progressive radical, like Joe Rogan. Joe Rogan wasn't a progressive radical, but he was left-leaning. Makes perfect sense. You look at the communities and things that he's involved in, he's very much a social liberal. No question about it. But because they got so crazy with their ideas, they have pushed people like Joe Rogan, they have pushed people like Bill Maher, they have pushed people like Stephen A. Smith into a position where they essentially are now right-wing influencers. Joe Rogan is not a conservative. Stephen A. Smith is not a conservative. Bill Maher is not a conservative by the traditional definition that you and I would use to define ourselves when we look at our own political identity. Those guys are not conservatives by any stretch of the imagination. But because the left has alienated everybody that is not believing their crazy ideas on the far, far fringe left of the party, those guys look like radical right-wing influencers. So we'll give a nice golf clap and a bravo hat tip to the Democrat Party this morning for all of their great work. Going back to the story this morning, it says Democrats widely believe that they must grow more creative in stoking online enthusiasm for their candidates, particularly in less outward political forms of media like sports or lifestyle podcasts. Many now take it as gospel that Mr. Trump's victory last year came in part because he has cultivated an ecosystem of supporters on YouTube, TikTok, and podcasts, in addition to many Trump-friendly hosts on Fox News. Well, him going out and golfing with Bryson DeChambeau, him sitting down with Theo Vaughn, him sitting down with the aforementioned Joe Rogan absolutely had an impact. Now, Kamala Harris had the same opportunities that Donald Trump did, but she decided she was going to be a petulant child about it, and she demanded that Joe Rogan fly to Philadelphia, build a podcast studio, and do a 30-minute interview. He told her to go to hell, and, well, that's exactly what happened. She didn't decide to sit down and interact in that platform. She decided to spend her time going on, you know, The View and NBC and MSNBC talking about her issues, and it didn't resonate with the public. No surprise there. The quiet effort amounts to an audacious position of which skeptics might say desperate. Bet that Democrats can buy more cultural relevance online, despite the fact that casually right-leaning touchstones like Joe Rogan's podcast were not built by political donors and did not rise overnight. Wealthy donors tend to move in packs, and some jabbed liberals worried that the excitement could cause money to flow into projects that are not fully fleshed out. They argue that the latest pitches on the left are coming from operatives who are hungry to meet donors' demand for a shiny new object. In a break from the past, some of the Democrats' new ventures are for-profit companies. Now, this is interesting as well, because in the New York Times, I'll give them credit for understanding this when they talk about Joe Rogan. His show was not a political show, and it's still not a political show. I listen to Joe Rogan pretty regularly. I would say I catch on average maybe 2 episodes a week, depending on the guest. I'm not somebody that listens to every single episode. I see it pop up on my YouTube feed. I see it pop up on Spotify. And if it's a guest and a topic that I'm interested in or even somewhat interested in, I'll put it on. And if it grabs my interest, I'll listen to the whole thing. If I get, 30 or 40 minutes in and it's like, man, whatever, I'm not loving this thing, then I turn it off. It's not a political podcast. It's not. We got some comments coming in on our Rumble chat this morning saying Joe Rogan is still quite the liberal. Absolutely he is. There's no question about it. He would say so himself. But the left has put him in a box of now being a right-wing influencer. It's insane. Joe Rogan is not, I would argue, is not overtly political. He does a 2 or 3 hour show every single day. The vast majority of his program, I mean, hell, let's just go and look at it right now. They're not political. They're not political at all. They're a whole bunch of other topics and discussions, whether it's, conversations about the military, whether it's conversations about going on, things that are, going on in the country, and in international politics or international issues, I should say. It's not that case at all. But for whatever reason, the left believes that, this guy's now a radical right-wing influencer. I mean, so here you go. These are the last couple of episodes on the Joe Rogan Experience. Here it is. The first one, just out a couple of, actually out yesterday. Jimmy Carr, a comedian, writer, and television host. Watch his Netflix special, Jimmy Carr, Natural Born Killer. Not political. Second one, Aaron Rodgers, of all people. Aaron Rodgers is a 4-time NFL MVP and Super Bowl champion who has played quarterback for the Green Bay Packers and the New York Jets. Not political. Amanda Knox. I actually listened to a little bit of this one. That one had some political stuff in there because she is a journalist. Guy Fieri, the Diners, Drive-Ins, and Dives guy. Not political. Historian of Science, Rebecca Lemov. That was the show back on May 15th. An archaeologist talking about a whole bunch of Egyptian antiques. Tom Segal, not political. This other guy, just talking about, in this case, psychedelic therapy. This guy's not political, but the left has made him political. The left has determined a guy that, as I just proved to you, is not a political podcast, is not talking news of the day, politics, day in and day out. They have determined that he is a right-wing conservative influencer. It's absurd. It's completely insane. So back to the article. And so far, there are still more ideas than hard-committed money. One Democrat operative described compiling a spreadsheet of 26 active projects related to creators, over a dozen of which are new since November. But a few of the efforts have ties to major donors that could give them a liftoff. Marissa McBride, a Democrat strategist who leads a donor group called Mind the Gap, said, quote, "It needs to start with a legitimate investment. There has to be something that is happening organically as well." And I don't agree with her first sentence at all. I don't believe for a second that legitimate investment needs to be a critical portion of this. I don't believe that. One thing that you can't buy is authenticity. One thing that you can't buy is the ability for people to have real, frank, honest discussions. You can't buy it. Why is Joe Rogan the number one podcast in the world? Not because he talks about conservative politics. In the world, I'm noting. Joe Rogan is not just the number one podcast in the United States. He tops the podcast charts throughout the UK, through the rest of Europe, all over the world. Obviously, mostly the English-speaking world where his show is broadcast. Why is that the case? Because he's authentic. He has a real, casual, normal conversation and brings in super fascinating and interesting guests. Whether it's NFL quarterbacks to individuals that, yes, do spend some time in journalism and politics. He did dozens of interviews with Elon Musk before he was involved. Those were fascinating. He's just really good at bringing people together and having a conversation that you feel like you're sitting in the room listening to. That's what Joe Rogan is. And no amount of money, no amount of check from a GOP mega donor is going to translate into, oh, well, here's our new Joe Rogan. You can't buy that. It has to be organic. And she notes that in her second part here, Marissa McBride. Quote, there has to be something that is happening organically as well. But see, this is the issue that the left is facing. They want an all-out left-wing political podcast, but at the same time, they want to attract an audience the size and the scope of Joe Rogan. You can't do both. You're not going to attract the audience and the guests and the conversations that Joe Rogan is able to do by doing an overtly political podcast. It's just not going to happen. Now, there have been some successes with their left-wing podcasts. You look at Pod Save America. That's the Left Bros podcast that is just a ridiculous attempt at the left to dissuade the American people and have their left-wing conversations. And it's a popular show. It's got a good audience, but it's nowhere near that of somebody like Joe Rogan. And I actually was looking at this the other day. I was going through some of the radio and broadcasting trade websites, and it was pretty interesting. I saw I was looking at the podcast charts, and it was amazing to see how many of these podcasts that are ranking in the top, 10, 20, 30 podcasts in the nation, how many of them are not political. I mean, here's the chart from Spotify, if you want to, take this as gospel. And it's the Joe Rogan Experience, no surprise there. A podcast with Amy Poehler. I know who Amy Poehler is. I can't imagine her podcast is overtly political. You've got a comedy podcast after this, Theo Vaughn's podcast, Prime Crime with Jesse Weber. It's a crime, one of those true crime podcasts, not political. A show called The Rotten Mango Video. I have no idea what that is. Another crime podcast, The Daily. That's a New York Times show, which is incredibly popular. I would admit I've never listened to it. Then you get into Tucker Carlson, Up First from NPR. And then you see some more political things in here. Sean Ryan's show is very popular. Before he moved over to the FBI, Dan Bongino had one of the top podcasts in the country. So there is an indication that conservatives, including people like Tucker Carlson and Dan Bongino, have done a really good job at winning the media landscape in terms of podcasts. But it makes sense, right? Because left-wing media owns pretty much every television station. The vast majority of newspapers and online media publications, all of that is left-wing content, whether it's ABC, NBC, CBS, you choose, dealer's choice as to what network you want to look at. It's completely and exclusively controlled by the left wing. Why was Rush Limbaugh so popular? Because the entire media ecosystem at the time was controlled by the left and still is to this day. Rush Limbaugh got on the radio and revitalized AM radio by just talking about something from the opposite point of view, giving people insight into what he thought from a different perspective. Now, Democrats tried to beat down Rush Limbaugh. They gave Al Franken a boatload of cash with their Air One, Air America network, their left-wing equivalent to try and beat down conservative talk radio. It was a complete freaking failure. They spent hundreds of millions of dollars building out a lineup that included people like Al Franken and Al Sharpton and Tom Hartman and all of these other guys to compete with Rush Limbaugh and Sean Hannity and some of those shows and Bill O'Reilly's radio program, Laura Ingraham. Didn't work. Why? because you didn't need to listen to the radio to get that coverage. All you had to do was turn on the television and flip through any of the news channels. That's why conservative media does so well in the podcast form. That's why people like Tucker Carlson and Megyn Kelly and Dan Bongino and all of these shows are so popular, because it's different. It's counterculture to the crap that you're being spoon-fed by mainstream media. So I don't even know why the left believes that they need this Joe Rogan. They own everything else. They've got all the news networks. They've got all the newspapers. They've got all the online websites. They own it all. It's very, very peculiar, and it's a very interesting insight into the Democrat Party. I'll get into more of this article as we continue the discussion on that this morning, coming up here in just a few minutes. Before that, I would like to tell you and thank the Law Group in Wilmington for their continued support of the program. When legal challenges arise, trust the Law Group in Wilmington. For over 20 years now, their experienced attorneys have provided high-quality, affordable legal services across Eastern North Carolina. Whether you're facing a divorce, navigating real estate transactions, or you're in a position where you need a strong defense, the Law Group has your back. Their dedicated team ensures that your questions are answered and any issues that you have are resolved promptly. Great news, they're located in downtown Wilmington and just a phone call away at 910-251-6088, or you can visit them online at lawgroupnc.com. That's 910-251-6088, or again, their website, lawgroupnc.com. The Law Group, experience and dedication you can rely on. Appreciate the Law Group for their continued support of the Nick Craig Show as we roll on this Friday morning ahead of a busy Memorial Day weekend, streaming live on YouTube, Rumble, and X, and 24/7 wherever you get your podcasts. And welcome back to the Nick Craig Show, streaming live this Friday morning on YouTube, Rumble, and X, 24/7 wherever you get your podcast. We are taking a look at a very interesting article over at the New York Times this morning. It's going through some discussions that are happening in Democrat donor circles about how do they compete with conservative media, specifically in the online sphere. When you look at Joe Rogan, which they claim is some right-wing political guy, which, as we talked about earlier, is not the case. His shows don't back that up as being the case. But you look at everything else that goes on. You've got Tucker Carlson's show that's very popular. Megyn Kelly is a very popular person as well. Dan Bongino had one of the number one shows in the country before he left that position to go do some work with Kash Patel and the FBI. And Democrats are scrambling. Democrats are struggling to try and figure out how to combat that message. And apparently at a meeting a couple of weeks ago, there was a bunch of PowerPoint presentations given to donors about how we find the next Joe Rogan. So let's continue with the article here this morning. It goes into, it says, shedding a hall monitor reputation. The first out of the gate has been Chorus, a well-publicized liberal nonprofit group co-founded by Democrat influencer Brian Tyler Cohen. But others have stayed under wraps until now. In November, Ms. McBride and other liberal operatives gathered in Washington, D.C. for a series of meetings to survey the election wreckage. At the headquarters of American Bridge, one of the largest Democrat donor networks, they evaluated and hatched a plan for a for-profit media company called AND Media, A-N-D Media, which stands for Achieve Narrative Dominance. Wow, they love their acronyms there on the left. The company incorporated in March and says it is aiming to raise $45 million over the next 4 years. The group hopes to have $70 million budget over that time frame based on predictions of $25 million in revenue. To this point, it says it's raised $7 million. Ms. McBride and Christian Tom, who led digital strategy for the Biden White House, we saw how great his digital strategy was, have pitched the company to American Bridge donors as a broad cultural project. Now, the social media out of the previous administration was atrocious. Hoping to move away from the current delicate hall monitor style of Democrat politics that turns off younger audiences, AND Media will focus on directly funding influencers and co-producing their content. opening a creator talent agency, and starting by inking deals with four flagship creators, according to a business plan that was shared with the New York Times. Another effort with ties to major donors is called Project Bullhorn, which is meant to pool contributions to back creator projects. The money is running through Jason Burkfield, who has advised the political giving of Eric Schmidt, the billionaire former Google chief executive, and others. Mr. Birkenfeld pitched the project to major Democrat contributors at a briefing this month featuring Senator Cory Booker of New Jersey. He is seeking to raise $35 million in the first year for Project Bullhorn and align work and projects, according to two people that have spoken to him. He is largely trying to amplify existing influencer networks. An early receipt of the money he raises will be funding a fund backing left-leaning creators on YouTube. Another will be a matching service to book these creators on YouTube shows and podcasts. Project Bullhorn plans to include a for-profit style arm that will, quote, have the potential to reap significant returns, end quote, according to a concept document obtained by the New York Times. We will need to create self-sustained businesses if we want to build an echo chamber with sufficient scale and reach. Well, I guess I give them credit for creating and identifying with the fact that they want to create an echo chamber. I guess I can give them a little bit of credit for that. It's just so interesting to read this article and to kind of close your eyes and imagine the discussions that are going on in many of these very, very big, wealthy Democrat donor circles. They just think they can buy everything. And there's a lot of things in life that you can, in fact, just buy. I mean, you have enough money, you can pretty much buy almost anything. Now, of course, money can't buy happiness, sure. But you can't buy authenticity, as I mentioned earlier. You can't buy a genuine interest in a conversation. That it just can't be done. No amount of money, no amount of sponsorships, no amount of for-profit entities have the ability to do that. And I think that's where the left is really missing the mark on all of this. All of these programs are somewhat similar, and they will compete for scarce capital. Democrat strategists and fundraisers say that many major liberal donors are still being stingy with their money, and that the few laying out cash are more focused on legal efforts to fight the Trump administration. Ah, yes, la resistance there from the folks on the left. One of the top former advisors to Vice President Kamala Harris's 2024 campaign, a digital media Rob Flattery, and a digital media executive, Mike Venassis, have been in conversations with donors in recent weeks ahead of what is expected to be a multi-million-dollar fundraising round for a new for-profit company called Channel Zero. The group is meant to provide back office services to content creators who already have large followings. Mr. Flattery's is also advising Project Echo, a new four-year, $52 million influence program from the People for the American Way, a progressive nonprofit group. The group is spending about $10 million of its own money and pitching donors for the rest, according to its president. A program called Double Tap Democracy, meanwhile, is working with 2,000 mostly apolitical creators who genuinely have smaller followings. Now, this is what I found most interesting in all of this. Apolitical, right? When you're thinking about how you can have influence on the American public, and I've mentioned this before, the vast majority of the American public is not people that are interested in politics day in and day out. They are not people that are interested in being and waking up in the morning and listening to political shows and political news day in and day out. That's just not the vast majority of the American public. It's just not. Every poll, every piece of evidence we have backs that up to be the case. Most people are busy living their lives. Most folks find politics to be a very nasty and disgusting sport, and they're just not super involved in it. Now, that doesn't mean that they don't vote. That doesn't mean that they don't keep a, you know, somewhat of an eye on what's going on in their communities or their states, but they're not invested in politics like you and like many, like me and like many of you are. It's just a, it's a different mindset. Some folks are super political, some folks are not, and that's fine. That's totally fine. And so to me, if I'm in these Democrat circles panicking about how we find the next Joe Rogan, I'm going after apolitical people. I'm overtly putting these messages into these apolitical content creators to try and get the narrative and get the message out there. I mean, slowly brainwash them into believing your side of the political agenda. That's how I would go about this. This Double Tap Democracy project was started by Rachel Irwin, who led a $30 million influence program last cycle for Future Forward, the biggest Democrat super PAC. But there was tension during the campaign over the size of the influencer program, which some donors wanted to be even bigger, according to a person that was briefed on the conversations. Ms. Irwin incorporated Double Tap late last year. She has received an initial grant of about $250,000 from Future Forward and has raised money from some Silicon Valley donors. She has argued to others that the party did not invest early or enough in cultural talent in the last election cycle and is trying to learn from her experience at Future Forward. Ms. Irwin wrote to Aliases in a March email seen by the New York Times and said, quote, "We cannot keep running these programs late in the cycle only to break down after or treat these relationships as transactional and expect success. Every day we don't engage online is a missed opportunity and we can't afford to wait." That's very accurate. And this is an issue in on both sides of the political aisle. You see this with GOP and Democrat groups. It is, in fact, very transactional. When you get close to an election cycle, these various groups spin up and they get people involved and they're having events all the time. And then when there's not elections going on, well, then a lot of those groups tend to fall by the wayside. They don't meet as often. They don't have discussions. They don't get together for anything. That's a big problem. I mean, it's this constant up and down roller coaster of building up a group of volunteers, building up a group of supporters, then essentially cutting it off at the head after the election is over, and then trying to redo the same thing in 2 or 4 years. That's not a sustainable strategy, and I think she's absolutely onto something there. To some Democrat operatives, the repeated gatherings of donors to mull such ideas has felt like a ceaseless calendar of cattle calls. Aides to liberal donor George Soros and Lauren Powell Jobs have held an idea-a-thon. They did that back in February in Washington, D.C. This month, about 50 digital operations presented their proposals at a hotel in Austin, Texas, at an event organized by Civic Resolve, a think tank backed by a Walmart heir, one of the Walmart family members who are flaming liberals. A gathering hosted by Future Forward this month at Half Moon Bay in California featured a session on Return on Culture that paired Nami Nandaldo, a progressive content creator, with Jeff Larson, a Democrat mega donor who recently bought the satirical website The Onion, as well as other individuals, including Mark Gallagher, a private equity veteran and Democrat donor, had invited contributors and operatives to the latest of a series of gatherings on the issues on Tuesday in New York. Mr. Flattery and his former Harris strategist, who has been at some of the donor events, said emulating this the right success would take time. He said, quote, "The key is building off of what's already resonating and investing in it. If it all goes into more tools for delivering poll-tested messaging, it'll fall flat with this audience. At this point, we might as well just buy ads." I'm really liking this Harris strategist guy. He's onto something here. And I'm not saying that tongue-in-cheek. I mean this genuinely. This is how the left operates. They think they'll go and throw a bunch of money at content creators, which they'll have success in doing because, like many online publications and shows, nobody's making any money. And not any significant money. So a Democrat donor comes in and says, "We're going to give you $60,000 to promote this message." These people are jumping for joy to do it. So that idea, though, doesn't work. You can't take a show or a product or a program. You can't take it fill it up with political messaging when it's something that's not inherently political, and as he notes here, using poll-tested messaging, and expect it to work. Because that's not why people are listening. They're listening because they like the host, they like the information that they're getting, they find it to be a unique discussion. There's a variety of reasons that people listen to podcasts and different radio shows and different YouTube broadcasts and all of those different things. Most of the time, it's not because it is well-produced. Most of the time, it's not because it has a strong backing from some liberal or some conservative group. That's just not the case. I mean, you look at Tucker Carlson. You look at Dan Bongino's show when that was at its heights. These guys didn't have major backing from right-wing conservative think tanks. Tucker Carlson was one of the most popular television hosts, was fired by Fox News, had a very strong name identity, very strong brand recognition, started up his own show, and now has done a great job with it. I mean, Christ, he's interviewed he interviewed Vladimir Putin, he's interviewed crazy people all over the world. I mean, he's done an incredible job with his show. And it's not because Americans for Prosperity, no offense to them, I like AFP, but Americans for Prosperity is not bankrolling the Tucker Carlson show and saying, "Hey Tucker, here's some polling that we did. You need to bring these messages into your show." That's not the case. Why are people listening to Tucker Carlson? Because he's interviewing interesting people. Why are people listening to Joe Rogan? Because he's interviewing interesting people. I mean, that's the issue at hand, and that's what the left just really cannot seem to wrap their head around. They cannot understand why some of these things exist. They cannot wrap their head around why. Why are these shows so popular? Why are these people being successful in their messaging? It's not because they're bought and paid for. It's not because there's some exclusive intervention that is taking place from Democrat donors and Democrat think tanks and progressive activist groups. That's just not the case. They are going about this the completely wrong way. And as I mentioned earlier, this is par for the course with the Democrat Party. They have an attitude that whenever they have a problem that is in front of them, the solution is to just shovel and throw money at it. And we know for a fact that that is not a solution. You can look at the out-of-control ballooning debt within the federal government. You can look at so many of these progressive states and cities and governments. Throwing money at the solution is not the problem. You end up raising taxes, borrowing money you don't have, and making it a terrible place to live. That's what happens. And the left is trying to do the same thing now, trying to buy a left-wing ecosystem, and it's not going to work. I can promise you it will not work because you can't buy authenticity and you can't buy the genuine conversations. Now, there is one person that seems to be doing this somewhat right on the left. That's Gavin Newsom. I've mentioned his podcast in the past. I will admit I'm not a frequent listener of the show, but I have tuned in from time to time to see what he is talking about, and he's got that nailed. He is incredibly authentic. He's inviting people like Steve Bannon on the show to talk about issues. That's the authentic conversation that's taking place. But here's the issue. These Democrat mega donors and these progressive groups that we just talked about in the New York Times article that want to bankroll these podcasts and bankroll these YouTube shows, they'll never let that conversation take place. They will never allow one of their content creators to give a platform to Steve Bannon. They will never allow any of their hosts or shows to give platform to Alex Jones or Tucker Carlson or any of these radical right-wing extremists. It just won't happen. And so built into the model is their inability to be authentic. Built into their model is a lack of authenticity. And so they're going to piss away, at least from the numbers that we're looking at, piss away hundreds of millions of dollars trying to build a left-wing ecosystem of podcasts and YouTube channels and social media stars, and it's all going to be for nothing. Because at the end of the day, what is the issue? Democrat policies suck. At the end of the day, Democrat ideas are garbage, and they're very unpopular. I don't care how much money $150, $250 million that you want to throw behind a show. You will not have a successful program talking about men and women's sports. You will not have a successful show talking about how it's appropriate to give 8 and 9 year olds hormone blockers because they believe that they're a different gender. That will never fly. That will never be a popular idea that will garner a large audience. It's just never going to happen because the ideas are batshit crazy. They're very, very unpopular with the American people. Great comment on our Rumble chat. They can't even wrap their heads around reality. It's exactly the issue. Their ideas are nuts. So you can spend $500 million if you want promoting left-wing politics. But when you get into the issues at hand, they're nuts. They're very unpopular. And that's the issue that the Democrats are facing. It's not something that, and I believe that they're going to be able to solve. Because unless they are willing to divorce themselves from the far left progressive radical wing of the party that believes these crazy ideas, that believes that Hamas are the good guys, that believe that it's appropriate for men to be in female locker rooms, that it's okay to give hormone blockers and puberty blockers to 8 and 9 year olds because they feel like they're a different gender. Until they're willing to divorce themselves from those ideas, their public messaging is never going to work. These are 80-20 political issues that the Democrats are on the wrong side of. They're just on the wrong side. And no amount of money is going to fix that. No amount of messaging is going to fix it. We saw that unfold in front of our very eyes with the men and women sports thing. Within just days of being in the Oval Office, President Donald Trump dismantled and destroyed years of Democrat narrative on this. He invited a bunch of female athletes that have gone through this ridiculous process into the White House, had them all lined up behind him, and signed an executive order protecting women in their own sporting leagues and in their own locker rooms. Within a day, with the stroke of a single pen, completely destroyed the left-wing narrative on it, blew it out of the water. I can only imagine the amount of money, time, effort, and resources that were spent to tell the American people, hey, you know, that's a pretty popular idea. Hey, you know, this is something that's really going to resonate with American voters. He completely annihilated it in a single day. So until the left is willing to leave the craziness to the side, to disenfranchise themselves from the most radical things that we talk about, you know, day in and day out, this is never going to work. These donors are just going to be pissing away money. Now, for the content creators, they're going to get rich. So, I mean, maybe I need to change my political tune. I mean, you know, we're talking about a lot of money in here, right? I mean, some of these places talk about raising $75 million. I mean, I could probably get a little chunk of that, right? Would you guys be okay if I maybe change my tune a little bit, rebrand the show, start talking about all of the great things that the left wing do? I mean, I'd probably get a pretty big payday. I could probably score maybe $100,000 out of one of these groups, right? I don't know. Something I'll think about over the holiday weekend. Sorry to all of you that appreciate the normal, sane conversations. You know, money talks. I'm sure Project Echo, who has a 4-year plan to spend $52 million, I'm sure I can squeeze a little bit of cash out of them. So if you start seeing some subtle messaging in the show that's leaning left, you'll know that I have been bought and paid for by Double Tap Democracy or one of these other groups. It's crazy. I strongly believe the biggest issue that the left has right now is the ability to just look in the mirror and self-reflect. They have proven year after year that they are incapable of doing that. They have proven that they cannot look at even polling. You know, they claim to be data-driven on all the things that they do. They can't even look at polling and say, man, these ideas suck. 80%+ of the American people think men and women's sports is a terrible idea. Terrible. Atrocious. Awful idea. They just can't do it. They seem to be completely incapable. So we'll keep an eye. We'll see if any of this materializes and if the left is successful in buying the next Joe Rogan, even though they had him and completely ran him off to the more right side of the political aisle. We'll keep an eye on this. It's going to be interesting, especially as we head into the midterms and see what the hell the Democrats have up their sleeves as we head into the presidential election coming up in 2028. Well, we have got a busy weekend across southeastern North Carolina, remembering all those who have not only actually given the ultimate sacrifice and put their lives on the line for the United States, but those that agreed to do that, unfortunately, were able to come home safe and get back to their friends and family on this Memorial Day weekend. We will be off on Monday morning. However, we will be back on our normal time slot, 7 a.m. live on YouTube, Rumble, and X coming up on Tuesday. Once again, thanks to the Law Group here in Wilmington for their support. Visit them online at lawgroupnc.com. Have a very safe and enjoyable Memorial Day weekend. We're back with you Tuesday morning right here on the Nick Craig Show.